So our story opens today with a prophet on the run. The spiritual and political life of Israel has decayed since last week's reading about King Solomon, leading to the particularly shameful administration of King Ahab. Among his many failures as king, Ahab was influenced by his wife, Queen Jezebel, to turn from worshiping the God of Israel and instead worship foreign gods and foreign value systems. And when the prophets of God in Israel, the religious leaders of the ancient nation, speak out against these problems, Queen Jezebel dispatches a group of assassins to hunt them down and eliminate any of her opponents. She also began a system of appointing prophets of the god Baal to key positions to bolster her religious and political agenda. And this led to the climactic showdown at Mount Carmel between the prophet Elijah and 850 of Jezebel's prophets. And in an incredible victory, Elijah proved to everyone in Israel that their God was more powerful than Baal. The people repent from their idolatry. They tear down these altars. They kick out all of these prophets. And they put King Ahab on the run, riding away in shame. And in a moment that seems like it's out of Game of Thrones, recognizing that public opinion has gone against her, that her influence is waning, Queen Jezebel decides that she will now send her assassins to go track down Elijah. Take care of him as well. So tired and afraid, Elijah prays to God, take his own life. Because the stress of being a prophet in Israel is too much for him to bear. He doesn't want to spend the rest of his life on the run. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away, Elijah says. And so God invites Elijah to the top of Mount Horeb, that mountain where Moses first encountered God, and promises to show Elijah the glory and power of the Almighty. If Elijah was a pastor today, we might say he's suffering from ministry burnout. Right? It's that kind of weariness that comes from experiencing chronic stress. Many of you, although not pastors, may have experienced this in your own life. It's the kind of weariness that comes from being a parent with a child who won't sleep at night, or a teenager who's doing a great job of being a teenager. It happens when you're a caregiver for an aging parent or a disabled family member. It may come simply at work with a massive project that has no end in sight. It's this weariness that begins to set in, feeling like you're taking care of everyone else, but there's not much time to take care of yourself. But as I was reading this story of Elijah, I was thinking about the ways in which we can experience burnout, not just in our personal lives, but in our public lives as well. I mean, regardless of your political affiliation, I think we live in one of the most chaotic and turbulent first 6 months of a new presidential administration. Conversations that once felt thoughtful and had some levity, we could trade barbs with one another, regardless of which side of the aisle we sat on, have now turned quite depressing and angry, and it's something we don't want to talk about anymore. And with social media and 24-hour news channels, we're constantly bombarded with messages from the right or from the left about what new thing is going wrong. Every minute, there seems to be some new and creative thing for people to be mad about. And when we combine this with our frustrations at the local level of underfunded public schools or a lack of affordable housing or a transportation system that feels on the verge of collapse, it's enough to make us want to throw up our hands and be done with the whole thing. And I'm genuinely afraid that the toxic level of anger in our public lives and feelings of helplessness about actually making a difference, that it's going to lead people to just disengage from our society entirely, to retreat back into themselves. I can't help but wonder if this was a factor in Israel and the deterioration of the public life of the nation in 1 Kings. I mean, the everyday Israelite wasn't excited about King Ahab's rule. It was a disaster. The economy was doing poorly after years of drought. Farmland was all dried up. There was an impending threat from rival nations looking at Israel, eyeing its last remaining gold storages as something to take. People were outraged at Jezebel's use of public funds to send them towards her personal profits to say whatever she wanted them to say. And addressing these issues felt so big, so impossible, that it's not surprising for a group of common Israelites to say, you know what, I've got enough problems at home. I don't need to deal with Jezebel and what she's up to. Whatever consequences come our way, let her and Ahab deal with the lot. Sadly, as the African proverb goes, when elephants fight, it's the grass that withers. The decisions from leadership at the top of Israel have a negative impact on the people at the bottom. And recognizing the urgency of his time, Elijah has been doing everything he can to address the problems affecting his community. If Elijah were a member of this church, he'd be one of those people that you constantly put gold stars next to their name, right? He'd spend every afternoon volunteering at Cunningham Park Elementary School. He might be a deacon of this church. He'd certainly be helping out with Vacation Bible School this week. He'd be running around from place to place to place, and that's in addition to whatever volunteer work he's doing at the local food kitchen. You'd come here on Sundays and you'd watch him just slouched in the pew, exhausted from trying to save the world. Taking a deep sigh, because in 7 days the world hasn't changed as much as he had hoped. Some of the problems he's been working on seem to be getting bigger and not smaller, and every day he turns his back and something new emerges behind him. So Elijah comes into a worshipful space ready just to call it quits, to give up. And it's in that space that God meets him. It's interesting how God is revealed to Elijah, don't you think? I mean, there's a lot of fireworks in this passage. There's some hurricane-like wind. There is an earthquake. There is a giant fire. These are all the magnificent ways in which we've seen God present the divine in power and glory elsewhere in the Bible. And yet God is in none of these things. We find God here in what our English translates as the sound of sheer silence. The Hebrew here, it's used elsewhere. It connotes the calm after a storm. Right? And Elijah, he puts his mantle over his head. He covers his face as a recognition that he has somehow found himself in the presence of God. He cannot directly look upon the glory of God. It's too wondrous for him. Now, God has already provided, prior to our reading here, some food and water for Elijah. I shouldn't pass that up too quickly. Keep in mind that in this story where Elijah needs some help and he's feeling stressed, God meets his bodily needs in addition to his spiritual needs. Taking care of our bodies is also a good way to take care of our souls. As well. Keep that in mind. Now, on the mountaintop, in this place where Elijah discovers rest, he also discovers renewal and recommissioning for service. Because while it's true that Elijah's at a moment in his life and ministry when he needs to take a step back, he needs to evaluate things, he needs to renew his spirit, God does not intend for him to be on the mountain indefinitely. The world will not become a better place on his wishful thinking alone. God has called Elijah, as God has called everyone else in Israel, to make the world as it is better resemble the world as it should be. So after a period of rest, God gives Elijah some new things to do. And a promise that the future of his ministry will transcend his perception about whether or not it's a success. Because the truth of the matter is, Elijah's not going to complete this work alone. In fact, his final assignment is that he has to go and seek out his successor and begin to bless that ministry. The future that God has called Elijah to help create and the work that God has called Elijah to does not depend all on him. If you listen to Elijah tell the story, he's the only prophet in Israel. He's forgotten about the 100 others that Obadiah has saved. Elijah on the mountaintop is so stressed out, he makes it sound like he's the only prophet Israel has ever had. Right? That's not the case. There's been a long line of prophets, men and women, who have passed the torch from one generation to the next. Elijah has received this, and now his commission is to pass the torch of following God, of transforming his community to the next person. I love this scene on the top of the mountain for Elijah, because it reveals so much about what it means to be people of faith, to engage in enduring work in mission, and to give ourselves perspective on our work as well. Perhaps I'm fascinated by the ways in which you have this great worker of justice and peace in his community, and how important spiritual practices and a healthy devotional life are so important. Because normally we don't associate the two with each other, right? We either think of great mystics like Thomas Merton or Teresa of Avila, and they're one category of people of faith, and then you put Martin Luther King Jr. and others in a different category. But I'm always amazed by the rich spiritual lives of great workers for justice, who are part of God's work in the world. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., one of my personal heroes, he's noted by everyone in his inner circle of his deep life of prayer. If you look at significant decisions he made in the movement, they were birthed out of times of prayer. Singing hymns in churches helped him through challenging times. Gandhi, the great leader of the independence movement in India, is known for his practice of meditation. Once, when faced a particularly challenging day, Gandhi was famously remarked, "I have such a hard day ahead of me, I will meditate for 2 hours instead of one." St. Teresa of Calcutta reflected daily in her journal. She prayed for hours. Cesar Chavez, the great leader of the farm workers movement in California, was a devoted practitioner of yoga. Meditated regularly. Bet you didn't know that. The story of Elijah gives us two lessons for today. And they're both for whether we face burnout personally as caregivers for others or in our public lives as people who work to be a part of God's mission in the world. The first is that we have to cultivate a rich inner life, a life of prayer and reflection. We have to care for our bodies and our souls so that we have the energy necessary to help others. You are not an invincible super being. Energy that renews itself automatically and you can just expend it as much as you want, right? Take time for rest. Take time for reflection. Take time to laugh with good friends. Take time to pray and study the Bible. Take time to find support in community. Even the great prophet Elijah needed time on the mountain. Read the Gospels and you'll find how often Jesus went by himself to pray. Second, when our work to help others, make the world a better place, faces challenges, when we're not sure if we're going to solve the problem or fix the issue, remember that it is not your responsibility to heal the world by yourself. God has not put that responsibility upon you. We may be called to put our faith into action, to be faithful to pursue God's promises, but we haven't been called to do it on our own. Seek out other people that God has placed around you who feel passionate about these issues as well. Share these burdens, for you are not the only one carrying the torch. And one day, you too will have to pass that torch to someone else. This is how God's ministry works. We trust that it is God who is the one responsible for bringing it to completion. Not ourselves alone. Even if the vision for that extends beyond the ways our eyes can see. This is why Paul wrote in Galatians, "Let us not get tired of doing what is right. At the right time, we'll have a good crop if we don't give up. But right now, whenever you get the chance, work for the good of others. Try and take the long view of ministry." So this week, in the times that you have, take time for rest. Take time to reflect. Take time to renew. That you might yet again pursue mission and ministry with boldness, following the Spirit of God who will bring every good work. completion.